Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that will never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. It's over the bar.
Hello and welcome to the RTGA podcast. Mikey Stafford here. It's All-Ireland final week times three. We've got the Camogie final on Saturday evening between Kilkenny and reigning champions Galway. We've got the Joe McDonagh Cup final between Kerry and Antrim, and we've got the All-Ireland senior hurling final on Sunday as well, obviously between Waterford and Limerick. So it's a great weekend for people who like stick and ball games. And joining us today, with Brendan Cummins, we have, as always, Rory O'Neill, and Aoife Sheehan is back with us. How are we doing, folks?
Good, Mikey.
I'm conscious I have three Munster people with me, so isn't
it's all Munster. It's all Munster, all Ireland hurling final.
Isn't it great? It's only the third one, though. Isn't that amazing? Seeing as you're God's chosen people when it comes to hurling, and it's only the third time you managed to land two of your counties in the final. Mm. Obviously, for those of you who didn't look up something to taunt your guests with this morning, you have to go back to Clare and Tip in 97, and obviously the classic Clare Cork replayed All-Ireland 2013.
Yeah.
If you count the replay, you've had three already, so this is the fourth, if you want to try and catch up with us a little bit. So we'll start there with the All-Ireland Hurling Final, which is obviously a rematch of the Munster Final, which I watched again this morning, Brendan, and it was a little bit of an odd game. It was a game of quarters. It was, and you wouldn't, I was looking at a few of the reports then as well, and a lot of people saying Limerick held off Waterford and, kind of withstood Waterford. And that was kind of what it was. They kind of stayed, for the most part, a point or two ahead. Neither team looked like scoring a goal. If they were still out there playing now, they wouldn't have scored a goal. It was a strange game. Limerick were the better team, but not by much. And then the interesting question is then, Waterford have definitely come on if you go by the second half against Kilkenny, whereas Limerick weren't overly impressive against Galway either. So it makes for an interesting final. I don't think anybody's considering it a foregone conclusion.
No, I think it's been interesting because I think at the start of the championship when we saw Limerick trounce Clare and then they took Tipperary apart, they probably played two teams that weren't that tactically set up to face Limerick. They went out and hurled them for all the world. But the game has evolved with the likes of Waterford then. So Waterford only played one inside. It's their natural way of playing the game. It wasn't unusual to do that. They felt no conscience at all by saying, we're going to flood the middle third of the pitch with bodies. And that system and style suited them. And then, of course, Limerick then just about got over the line. I think the introduction of Seamus Flanagan for the last quarter was huge. A big takeaway I had from that game as well is that the tactics board was thrown into the old stand, and John Kiley stood in the middle of his group and said, right lads, we need fire and brimstone here now. We're not going to tactic our way out of this one. And they got it. And then the Galway game, obviously Galway had a sweeper set up, so therefore to concede goals wasn't going to be a huge thing for Galway. And it kind of made it, I won't say a dour game, but it certainly dampened the flair, I suppose, that when the scoring prowess we'd see from Limerick. I wouldn't expect that too much different from this All-Ireland final. Waterford will probably use the same kind of matchups they did the last day. What's intriguing for me is I think Limerick might go a little bit longer this time, because when they've had periods of dominance, that's the next evolution, I suppose, for Limerick is Kilkenny did it when they got on top of you. They didn't score 4 points, they scored 2-2. And the game was over. So I think this time they probably will work the ball to the platform, which is between the 265s. And they may keep Seamus Flanagan and Aaron Gillan inside and put the ball in a bit higher into them. Now, it doesn't have to be that accurate because the two of them are very strong in the air. But the last time in the Munster final, if you watch behind the goals, both Casey and Gillan did a bunch and break. So they ended out on the sideline when they won possession, which meant it was harder then, I suppose, to get goal chances. So early on, I think Limerick may try to go, not route one, but a more, refined version of route one in the way that Kinnerk will go about his business to try to get goals, because Waterford have a goal threat. Yeah. And I think that's going to be the key for them. And that's what has them buoyed with so much enthusiasm and hope coming into this final.
Yeah, we'll come back to that Waterford goal threat in a minute, because it was interesting that, you actually forgot who was playing in the full forward line for Waterford in that Munster final. They were a non-factor in the game. Limerick obviously use their full forward line a lot more, but it's not about scoring goals to them either. As Brendan says, they're breaking, they're getting the ball. I thought a big a big factor in that Munster final was Shane Fives going off injured, I thought, because he had been excellent. He had been, his strength, his physicality is something that will, hopefully he'll stay on the field for 75, 80 minutes this week. I think Waterford will be hoping, because he's one of their most experienced players now, but he brings something that little bit different, and he won't be bullied by any of those Limerick forwards.
No, he's certainly a bigger unit. There's no doubt about that. But I was very impressed the last day with Ian Kenny. I mean, it was kind of went on, noticed the flick away from TJ Reid, which is one of probably the turning points of the game. But there's no doubt, like, the last day of the Waterford full back line were jumpy enough in the first half, which you kind of expected, in fairness to Conor Prunty. Like, you know, he's captain the team and it's his first time really playing in Croke Park. So I think they've gotten all those nerves out of the way. But on Ireland final day is a different one. I mean, the experience that Limerick have coming into this should mean that they hit the ground running. They should do it, and Waterford are hoping they do. So if Limerick can pounce on them and get those goal chances, certainly the Waterford full back line is probably where they'll target. Now that I hear that Aaron Gillan, I think, played the weekend in a trial match, so he seems to be okay and fitting well, and it's great to see him being able to play the final and all that. But yeah, I think inside in that full back line, both full back lines will be seriously tested. You take Morrissey up the other end with Nash and Finn, you know, they're going to be tested as well, because you take it, Austin Gleeson and what's his name inside in the full forward line with Waterford, Desi Hutchinson. Desi, like, Desi's been fantastic, and himself and Austin stayed there in the first 10 minutes of the All-Ireland semi-final, but Waterford just hit the ball into them. So if it goes in, 2-on-2 battles inside are what this thing is all about. It's, can you win the right to hit the ball in, is what the question is in the middle third. And both teams will get a fair share of ball into their strikers inside. Who can make the most of it will be the difference, who'll win the All-Ireland or not.
Yeah. Aoife, there was questions about the Limerick full back line, obviously, after the few injuries at the start of the year. And they've held up pretty well. They've conceded a few goals, but nothing insane. But you'd have to imagine Waterford are going to test them more this time. Like, Desi Hutchinson showed what he can do in a couple of matches since the Munster final. There has to be more of an effort to use him and the goal threat, because I personally don't think you beat Limerick if you don't score a goal or two.
I think so. I think Sean Finn, like Desi, posed a few problems, but Sean did really well. But with Limerick, I think they don't see themselves as cornerbacks or fullbacks or whatever. They're a defensive unit, and that's the way they play. Yeah. So when they're coming out from the back line, it's like a flow. It's like the Mighty Ducks, if you ever watch the Mighty Ducks, Flying V. They're all coming out together. And there was a great point, even play or scored against Waterford. It came from Sean Finn, you know, over to the other side, it came out anyway, and it ended up with Declan Hannon scoring a point. And they're well able to do that. That's the deal. They work through the lines. And they never leave each other exposed. That's a really big thing for the Limerick backs, you know, that you think, sure, that, you know, you might expose Dan Morrissey. It's his first year inside full back. You think, yeah, will he be there to be taken? But I don't think so. I think he gets so much support from everyone else that they're all, you know, working back and playing as a unit that it's hard to see them, you know, being exposed and left in a one-on-one situation, you know, ever.
Rory, looking at the Waterford attack, the one man on everybody's lips after the last couple of games has been Jack Fagan, the Meath man playing for Waterford, which is a great story in itself.
Great story.
Watching back the Munster final, he was anonymous. He barely got a puck of the ball, and he came off probably 10 minutes into the second half. So again, it's an area you would have to imagine they're going to get him under more puckouts. The Stephen O'Keefe's puckouts against Limerick were a serious problem as well. So they've seemed to have discovered Jack Fagan as an outlet there in the last two games. So that's another area where you could see Waterford are surely going to ask more questions of Limerick.
Definitely. I think the big thing, it's kind of almost an understated part of this final that hasn't really been hugely discussed, given that it's nearly always the go-to piece of analysis for most teams, is the puckouts. And you have two excellent goalkeepers. Brendan obviously would be a very good person to talk to about this, obviously having played in the position for so long. But the one, like they are going to have to try and win some a little bit more primary possession if they are to score goals. If you look at the opposite end of the field, Limerick's go-to ball and their favoured out ball nearly every time. Like, Nicky Quaid is no problem in going short. Neither does Stephen O'Keefe. But the sort of default puck out for Nicky Quaid almost every time is Garrod Hegarty, and he is probably unmarkable nearly at this minute. He's a big, big puzzle for Waterford to solve. Who do we see picking him up? Kevin Moran? Brendan, Aoife, would you see Kevin Moran maybe so. In that role? Yeah.
Because Caelan Mines will probably pick up Tom Morrissey, won't he?
Yeah, no, you're like that to me is going to be a big issue for Liam Cahill, because, I mean, Garrod Hegarty is such an unbelievable target, but he's also an exceptional hurler as well. So if he gets the ball in his hand, it's trouble. Like, it's trouble every single way. He's either going to set something up, or he's going to take a score himself, or he'll slip Galan in. So I think the conundrum around the puckouts is going to be a major factor on Sunday. I think that from a Waterford perspective, I think they may look to go short a little more often than they would have in the past, and look to try and bypass that Limerick half back line as much as they can, and try and get the ball directly in to Desi Hutchinson. Almost, as Brendan mentioned, almost go route one. And yeah, if they can do that, but then again, Limerick will be happy enough to go man to man. They probably won't allow the handy one, and they might push up and press, forcing Saki to launch it down on top of that half back line, which is what Limerick will want ultimately. Yeah. So that to me is a massive game of chess, and I'm fascinated to see how that part of it plays out.
How do you see it, Brendan? Because the easy way to look at it is that Stephen O'Keefe tried to go long, didn't work most of the time. He tried to go short, and the Limerick forwards, the thing he knows about the Limerick forwards is that, you know, it's a little bit like Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool. They pounce, and they know it's coordinated. It's also a bit very like the physical Mayo and Dublin footballers last weekend. Mm. It's coordinated. They're pretty much trying to herd you to where they want you, and they're very good at that. So the short puck out's a problem. Obviously, the long puck out is a problem. And O'Keefe is a wonderful goalkeeper, but would you say he's not the most accurate? It doesn't have the most accurate puck out of the top intercounty goalkeepers.
No, he's not. His swing isn't that natural to go short. The hurl he's using is probably the boss, and it is very big, and it's hard to control when you're trying to hit the ball 30, 40 yards. You're right. I think Galway got suckered into the small bit.
They went after Aina Murphy, didn't they, Brendan?
Yeah.
Well, they did, but in fairness to him, looking back on it, like, it was only the execution of the pass was wrong. The pass was on. It was the right thing to do. It was just executed, unfortunately, on the day by Aina Murphy, just poorly. And that can happen when you're a young goalie in Goal Park, and you're told by your management, we're going to play through our 45 to 65 majority of the time. That was fair pressure on you, you know. And I think Liam Cahill will go long on 70% of it, and he'll say, do you know what, we'll pick up the pieces when it goes long. We know that their half forwards are going to sit back. I think Kevin Moran will probably follow Morrissey around the pitch like he did in the Munster final, and he quenched him. If you think about it, the Limerick forwards, their half forwards, Hegarty and Morrissey, are normally marked by nobody. They sit back between no man's land, between the half back line, the half forward line, and most wing backs won't follow them. But if you tied De Burka playing at six as a sweeper and you have seven backs, you can follow him down the field. And I think Caelan Lyons will follow Hegarty. I don't think he'll hold this time, because if you hold, he gets free possession. He can hit it 80 or 90 yards, so it goes over the sweeper and you're dead. So you might as well be killed trying and all that kind of stuff. And I think Waterford learned that against Kilkenny, that when you have a guy sitting, you're 5 and 7, can go up the pitch and let's engage him. Let's turn Limerick over in their half the pitch like what they're trying to do to us. Don't give him handy ball to get into the game. And I think if they do that and take that freedom of play, you know, that'll be the key part of it. But certainly the puck outs, I don't see him going overly short. I think Liam Cahill will say, we won't hand the early impetus to Limerick by turning us over and deflating our buzz. They'll go long, but Limerick will certainly be going short out to Kyle Hayes and trying to find Hegarty if they can.
That was their major outball in the Munster final for the first 20 minutes. It was Kyle Hayes, because Waterford weren't probably expecting him to be there. You know, he's a big target and he's a hard runner. So the first puck out he took in the Munster final, I think he ran about 40 yards up the sideline with it. He can do either, Kadifa. He's really... he can play an accurate pass because he's one of the best forwards in the country playing at wing back, and he can also, he's a big, big man and he can barrel through those tackles, can't he?
Exactly. And he's a great find at half back, because I think, you know, initially when I think, you know, Limerick people might have heard that he was going back half back, they were probably a bit disappointed, you know, that we'd miss him in the forward line. But he brings a serious attacking threat from half back, and that's, you know, that's the way the game has evolved. It's like football. You're attacking from the back and you're flying up that way. that way. And just his distribution of ball, he knows the way the forward wants it. He knows where to lay it and lay it off. And just, I suppose, Aaron Gillan, Galway stifled out his supply a little bit, but, you know, I still think, like, just going back to the puckouts, maybe that, you know, I think Waterford might try and follow the puckouts. Maybe their whole half-forward line might flood onto, you know, one side for their own puckouts and then try and pick up the breaks and break off it. Like what they were doing against Kilkenny, like that was ferocious. But I suppose you can't do that for the full 70 minutes then either. So they will need a few different options there.
Yeah.
One thing there, Aoife, I don't know whether or not you heard, but there's, you know, the usual rumours in advance of All Ireland finals. But apparently Richie English is meant to be pulling up trees at the minute in training. Now I don't necessarily see you, like, it'd be a bit of a gamble to probably throw him into, like, I don't think he's hurled too much since he's come back from a very serious injury, but by all accounts he's hurling up a storm. So I don't know, I haven't heard that now,
but I think, I suppose, the way the cornerbacks and the way Barry Nash is playing as well, I mean, he's another forward gone back to the back line. But I wouldn't be changing up anything anyway at the moment, I don't think. I think they're happy enough, their unit is solid at the back. But what an option to have to bring on if anyone does get in trouble on the day, you know, that a serious man marker, he doesn't give his player an inch. So, you know, a real good guy to be springing off the bench, definitely.
And it allows you maybe to release Dan Morrissey out to the wing and then allows Kyle Hayes to maybe move into centre forward.
Yeah. So
the wealth of riches available to John Kiely is enviable, in fairness.
I think that even when the forwards are coming on, I think just a few little things haven't been happening for them. Like, we've seen David Reedy, he had a good few chances the last day. He could have come off with a couple of goals and even a few points as well. And, like, you know, that will click one of the days, and I think it will happen for him. So he'll be hoping, I suppose, that, you know, his bench will bring that with him the next day.
Yeah, the Limerick bench is impressive. We might get to it in a minute. Brendan, I guess you look at the likes of... You look at, like, say, Aaron Gillan and Keane Lynch, Garrod Hegarty, like the Limerick's kind of talisman, you kind of expect the 7 or 8 out of 10 performance from them every week. Is the issue with Waterford the fact that you're not absolutely sure, outside of Stephen Bennett this year, there's a little bit of an inconsistency from their best players, maybe not even for a whole match, but you might say Austin Gleeson might be brilliant for 20 minutes. He might disappear for 15 and then he might come back and be the best hurler in the world for another 30 minutes. And perhaps I would imagine it's something Liam Cahill is aware of, and I'm sure it's something he's trying to manage. But, like, there is a case where Waterford's best players aren't as consistent as Limerick's best players. They're probably every bit as good a hurler, but maybe they're not quite as consistent.
Yeah, and I suppose the one person you'd look at in all that is Austin Gleeson in the All-Ireland semi-final in the first half. You're looking going, oh, this game is drifting away from Austin again. He was sauntering on the balls, hurling headlong. He wasn't picking him up. It wasn't sticking. He was hitting it wide off the back foot. All the stuff that we'd have went to, oh, no. But I think Liam Cahill will be challenging the players to look for the perfect performance at the weekend from the start. Because the reality is, he can easily say, we've nothing to lose, lads. Limerick are looking to win their 10th game this year on the trot. They're supposed to come in and beat the life out of you. It's a coronation we're turning up for. You can just hear him saying it inside in the dressing room. And that can give those players a freedom to play. And if Austin decides, which he can do, and he decided in that second half against Kilkenny, that, you know what, I'm going to stand up here and I'm going to take hold of this game. And then Bennett rolls in around him, Jamie Barron, and all those lads start firing. I think you will always get an honest shift off of Fagan and Neil Montgomery and these lads. But the reality is, to win All-Ireland, you need that X factor. And whether Austin likes it or not, he is the X factor for Waterford. When he fires, everybody else around him just gets huge confidence. So I think we will see it. The last time Waterford played in the final, remember, Austin was centre forward. McInerney followed him all over the pitch. It was his first All-Ireland final. He was hurler of the year. He was all the whole 9 yards. The weight of the world was on his shoulders. Yeah. Liam Cahill's trick this year has, and he did it with the tip under 20s. It's the sum of the parts. That team didn't have massive, fantastic hurlers, but they all knew how to work together to get the team across the line. And you can see that with Waterford, the work rate.
He actually, Brendan,
massive.
He actually played okay against Clare in the qualifier, and he was still taken off.
Yeah.
I thought he actually played quite well. And I'd say there was an element of Liam Cahill saying, okay, you know, you're motoring now, but you know, you've a bit to go yet here, so don't be getting, you know, too fond of yourself.
Notions,
like.
And,
yeah. You know, it's like, to me, like, I would think Austin is the most naturally gifted hurler that there is.
Yeah.
Is there better players than Austin? Yeah, TJ is probably better. I would say when Austin Gleeson was growing up, there was, you know, I don't know if he would have actually required a huge amount of coaching. He just strikes me as the type of fella that once he picked up a hurley, he could just do it naturally. Mm-hmm. And it was just, it just, everything came easy to him. And I think at times maybe he doesn't marry up the ugly and the dirty side of the game, which you have to do now at intercounty level. You have to do at every level. And I think if you can get an Austin Gleeson where he can actually bring both elements, I mean, you're talking an irresistible force, really, and a major puzzle for Limerick to solve on Sunday.
Yeah, and I think he's got the work done as well, Rory. I think when he meandered along, his fitness wasn't where it was supposed to be. I remember I took a team down to Carriganore to play Watford, and he played about 25 minutes of the match, and then he went up behind the goals. I'll never forget it. He had one of those Watford stripy hats, the blue and white with the tassel on the top of it, and they were doing shuttle runs. But he did the shuttle runs, he left everybody for dead. It was like watching a machine doing it. Like, I didn't pay much heed to the game we're playing for the last 10 minutes. I was watching Austin running, and I said, oh my god, he just glided over the muck, you know, he turned and he just accelerated again. And this year, he's during lockdown, he's getting the rewards of the work he did then. He's an absolute turn back into that machine. And that gives a guy a freedom to go and express himself because he knows he's got a solid base behind him. And I think, again, it comes back to Liam Cahill and Mikey Beavens and Stephen Frampton, the work they've done with them, obviously in one-to-ones, to say, look, don't let this good career, this ability you have, go down the drain. Show the world what you're able to do. Build yourself during lockdown. He's done it. And us as hurling people, you're right, Rory, he is a sensational player to watch.
He's so exciting to watch. I mean, if you're going, you just like, you really are excited, just as as somebody who's just like loves watching the sport. I mean, if you're not excited to watch Austin Gleeson play, sure, you may as well just go and watch drafts or something.
Aoife, considering that you would imagine Limerick will do everything in their power to keep Declan Hannan free of a marking job. Who does pick up Austin Gleeson? Does it depend on where he goes on the field, or do Limerick detail someone to mind him for 75 minutes?
I presume he'll start inside on Dan Morrissey, but after that, yeah, they will want to keep Declan Hannan free, because I think that's Declan's role really for the last, you know, number of games, especially that, you know, he's picking up the loose ball, he's the option of the runner off the shoulder, and, you know, he's coming up with points in games as well. And I suppose in terms of hurling ability, like similar to Austin, I suppose Declan is so skillful, you know, he's got all the skills as well. He commands as well, you know, he's spraying the ball into the forwards. But yeah, they'll definitely
quarterback role he plays, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Definitely, I think, yeah. So it will be interesting to see who will pick him up. You know, will William O'Donoghue maybe come back in that role as well? Will he? Because I think William is a player that gets overlooked in Limerick an awful lot. He's such a workhorse, another strong player, another six-footer. And you know, he's doing an awful lot of the donkey work as well for Limerick. He's winning the dirty ball, he's getting it out, and he's making a lot of scores. So look, could it be him floating in around? But I suppose it's like I mentioned the unit before. I mean, there's nobody left kind of on their own. They're all picking up their player, and I think I've seen it even in a few pieces this week. There's no such thing as, well, you know, my fella didn't score, so I had a great game. There's no, you know, there's really none of that anymore, I think, in the hurling game as a whole. So it will be interesting to see what happens there. And, you know, maybe Austin Gleeson might want to go out and impose himself on Declan Hannan, who knows, and drag him around the place. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting one to look at coming into it.
Rory, the fair play to Colm Lyons, the referee for the Munster final. He put his whistle in his pocket for the first half, at least. Shockingly few frees. Fergal Horgan, we wait to see how he goes with it, but he's not the most whistle happy either. So there's a chance we get a very free flowing, you know, action heavy All Ireland here.
I think they've gotten the refereeing appointment absolutely spot on. When I heard that Fergal Horgan was refereeing this game, I was delighted. I was lucky enough for both semi-finals in hurling and football. We had a feed of the ref mic, and so I could hear what was being said by the referee to the players, and I could hear what the players were saying back. And like the, in fairness, like the thing that you'd have to say, like James Owen's obviously a much quieter guy, kind of goes about his business in a much more understated
very
way.
Thoughtful in Wexford, or, you know.
Yeah, excellent referee as well, in fairness. I mean, like, he got some criticism for the handling of the Limerick-Galway match the following day. I thought it was a bit unfair, to be perfectly honest.
Definitely
I thought
unfair,
he actually,
yeah.
I thought he did a good yeah. job, in fairness. But I thought Fergal Horgan's handling of the game the night before, absolutely outstanding. The thing with Fergal Horgan for me, and this is very apparent when you can hear the ref mic, is he stamps his authority on the game very early. He doesn't take any messing or any silliness. The players have a huge respect for him because I think he played the game to a reasonable level. Would I be right in that, Brendan?
More than a reasonable level. He was so goalie to me.
Goalie, wasn't he?
Jesus, if you couldn't get Brendan out of the team, how good could he be?
Yeah, you know. So he played at a very high level, obviously. And, you know, I think what he does from the very, very start, once the ball is thrown in, he commands complete respect. And I think the players buy into that. And I think what you'll see on Sunday is, I think you will see a very physical game because he allows that element to go, but you won't see any messing or any silliness because he just doesn't tolerate it. And I think he will contribute to what I think will be a fantastic contest because he'll remove himself from the equation by having the authority there without having to really impose himself that much. The players will get on with it, and I think that will add to the spectacle even further.
You don't have any concerns about him refereeing at IFA as a former teammate of Liam Cahill?
I know there was a team sheet floating around last night on Twitter with Liam Cahill was centre forward, I think, and I think he was second goal. So, no, look, I think he's at the level where you don't want to be questioning his integrity or anything like that. That shouldn't be a factor. I'm sure there'll be a few texts going around, all right, but no, I don't think so. There was a lot made of it, you know, the last time this kind of came up. But Johnny Murphy.
No, I don't think so either. So listen, we'll do a few predictions here. We'll start with yourself, Brendan.
Just one last thing there, Mikey, and I'd be interested in getting yourself and Brendan and Aoife's view. How much of a factor do we think, guys, and in whose favour could it play the fact that no parade, no meet the president, no worrying about match tickets, no crowd before the ground, no atmosphere, no up for the match, for whatever that's worth, right? None of that, you know? Do we see that being a factor in terms of the team's mental and, I suppose, physical preparation? And is it a benefit to either team and an advantage to either team, would you think?
For me, I think it's a huge advantage to Watford. If you're going to do something, the fact that there was no crowd, that they could hear Liam Cahill in that All-Ireland semi-final, and there is a comfort when you can hear Mikey Beavens and Cahill, your manager and your coach's voice, in times of a storm. If you hear them shouting in and all, it does relax you a bit as a player. I remember Eamon O'Shea was running across the pitch with us, and I could see him 80, 90 yards away, and for some reason, it just relaxed you and calmed you. So imagine if I could hear his voice, you know, it means you don't panic as much, right? So I think it has. Certainly, I was down in Dungarvan last night doing a socially distanced event there that they were doing. And there was no massive hype, obviously, because everyone's confined to the houses. And I think that suits the Watford players because there's no, oh, we can bridge the gap and this is our year. And they stay in their bubbles. They stay away from everyone because of COVID. They don't want to mess it up for any of that. No tickets, no what are we wearing after the match, none of that crap. So you just go out and play. And I think it's a huge advantage to Watford that this is the way they're going to play this final. I've no doubt about that. Limerick will go about their business anyway. They're seasoned campaigners. They know the story. No problem there. They just plug themselves into the process. But for Watford, I think the less variables in there, the better for them. And this is a huge help for Liam.
I think it's an advantage for Watford before the game, definitely, Brendan. But I think during the game, I don't think it's an advantage for either team to have no crowd personally, but I think Watford, a bit like Wexford, they wear their heart on the sleeve a good bit, and I do think not having fans in the stadium, especially if you go 4, 5, 6 points down, you know, and it
do
you
that know, though. Like the Watford, you notice Watford. That's what Liam Cahill, I think, has brought to them. There was no kissing the crest There was no jumping around. The full-time whistle went. Nobody
they
ran.
They almost walked off. They just they literally like just walked off the field after the Kilkenny match. It was very odd, actually.
Yeah, it's very process-driven. It's very cold and calculated. It's very workmanlike what we want to achieve here. They have to suck emotion out of this thing as much as they can. I think that's what's happened, Watford, in the past. You take the first 10 minutes of the All-Ireland final against Galway, 5 points to one down. They get the whole week telling everybody, oh, we don't want to go behind early. Oh, my God, we have a sweeper. The reason he's there is to make sure we don't go behind early. And then they start to get going and the kissing of the jersey started and all this craziness. That's not this Watford team DNA. They're cool and calculating. I think they just want to get this thing done the way they want to do it. And let's not get too emotional about it. Like that's what I sense from them being up there even on the night.
That's interesting. What do you think, Aoife? The four, I was actually talking to, I think we're doing a piece for the weekend that Waterford have gone from madness to method. They're, you know, the team in Milan and Shanahan used to be, as you know, just said, like kind of pure emotion. But as Brendan says, that's not Liam Cahill's way. This is, you know, we have a plan, we have a strategy, and you don't want to deviate from that or be distracted from it.
Yeah, and I think that's across the board. I even noticed the same with, I think even in the Camogie games that I've been at this year, once the final whistle goes, Galway got to the Ireland final, they shook their hands or whatever, did a bit of a fist pump, but they were gone. But that's what's kind of happening now. It is a process, it is next step, and then, you know, you're hitting the final step. But I think for Limerick, there's a little bit of pressure on them, and I think by not meeting people, you know, even Declan Hannan was alluding to this morning that he's working at home, he's in his sitting room, he's, you know, he's not meeting people, so he doesn't know what the hype is. He's seen the flags, he's seen the green and white up and the roads, whatever, but he's not meeting people saying, oh, how are you fixing the weekend, Declan, 30 times a day or whatever else. So, like, that's good for them too, and it's keeping it low-key for Limerick, because there is a bit of pressure. We see these guys as being a bit of a golden generation, you know, we want them to achieve as much as they can. And they are, you know, they're a brilliant set of lads. And so that pressure is taken from them as well, a little bit, I think, going into it really low-key. So I suppose for both sides, there's advantages in it, definitely. So it's just who utilises it. But I suppose from the lack of a crowd there, that will be, you know, it's a pity, obviously. But you do get a good G up from your crowd. I mean, if you're you know, coming back from behind, especially, and, you know, you get a bit of a run, a bit of a momentum. But then we have the water breaks as well. They're going to be a factor. We saw what the third quarter did for Waterford the last day. So look, it's there's so many variables in it now.
They won the third quarter of the Munster finals by 3 points. So. That could be a factor, all right.
Yeah.
Okay, Rory, I'll go to you first. How do you see it going, and who do you see winning?
I've heard a few people say that Waterford are going to have to bring the performance of a lifetime to win this. Now, I'd actually flip that a little bit on its head. I think Waterford will bring a performance. They absolutely will. I think Limerick, funnily enough, are actually going to have to bring the performance of a lifetime to win. But I do actually think they'll bring that. I think there's more puzzles for Waterford to solve on Limerick's side than Limerick have the opposite way around. I'd have a couple of concerns still in relation to Waterford. Two of the goals they conceded against Kilkenny were very rudimentary. I mean, it was just route one, ball down, bounce in over the top, bang into the back of the net. Like, if you do that against Limerick, like, they're going to eat you for breakfast. So I think also that Limerick are sort of at a stage of their maturity now, that they're probably heading into their peak years. They're probably looking at, like, they've got so many quality top-class hurlers, you know, right through the spine of the team, plus on the bench. And I think they're heading in now to a time in their careers where they're certainly, the next 3 years, I could absolutely see Limerick win two of the next three, as long as they can keep the motivation and the hunger rates going. And I'd see one of those All-Irelands being won on Sunday. But I definitely think there's an All-Ireland in this Waterford team, and it will come, just not this weekend, unfortunately, for me.
How about that, Brendan? Do you think Liam Cahill, he's worked wonders in his first year, but is it too early, or is this exactly when you should win it?
That's exactly when they should win it. I've been looking at Limerick all year and thinking they were unbreakable and unbeatable, to be honest with you. But I'm just looking at the momentum coming into this and who feels more invincible. I think Waterford at this stage, the way they performed in the second half, might give them that extra bit of freedom to play. And we've had a mad kind of a year. And any of the teams I've looked at this year and back, they've all lost. So I'm sorry for Waterford now. I'm going to say they'll win the All-Ireland. But only on the basis that everything is teed up for Limerick to do it. And they haven't been scoring goals freely enough. It's probably wrecking their heads to hear people say that about them. But I just think that Watford are set up, the only team in the country that have played the same type of system as Limerick. They don't have to change a major amount to face them. So it's in their DNA for all the world to go out and do what they're going to do on Sunday. And I just think with Desi Hutchinson inside, he gives Watford something that they were missing for years. Shane Bennett tried to do the role, it didn't really suit him. Hutchinson's much, much better at it. And I just think that he might be the one on Sunday that'll tilt the balance and maybe Watford might jump the fence.
You totally agree there, Aoife, yeah?
Oh, yeah, nodding away there, yeah. I suppose to echo Brendan, I think Limerick will have to get goals. You know, sometimes Limerick can be a bit clinical. They'll just take their points when you think, oh, there's a goal on here, or if they hit full steam ahead for the goal. So I think they will have to get goals to win. But no, I do. I think they'll kick on, hopefully, in the last 10 minutes, and I can see them winning by a few points.
Okay.
Hopefully.
So that's 2 for Limerick, 1 for Watford. I'm afraid I'm also going to go for Limerick. So, like Brendan, I'm a bit of a curse.
Can I just say one thing on it, though, Mikey? I think, regardless of who wins, and I know this might sound sort of trite and ever so slightly, you know, twee, but I do think it's fantastic. Like, these are two counties that don't traditionally enjoy huge levels of success, and I know Limerick are in the midst of a golden era for Limerick hurling, and like, even if they do win, people will say, should they won it 2 years ago, but like, Limerick don't win many All-Irelands, so if they win
more,
I think
it's
no exactly. So I think, regardless of who wins, I mean, like, for instance, if Waterford were to win, right, and it's not beyond the realms of possibilities, you're looking at a 7th different winner in the last 8 since 2013. 7 different counties have won the All-Ireland since 2013. That, to me, is incredible for the game, especially when you look at what's going on in Gaelic football, which apparently traditionally was a much more democratic sport, which is obviously not the case now. So I think the game is in good, the game is in really good health. And I think, regardless of who wins, it's going to be a great story. I think it's going to be a superb match, but I just think the slightly more experienced team will get over the line. Sorry to my pals in Waterford.
Okay, speaking of anti-democratic, we'll get on to the Camogie then, which is, as we know, ruled with an iron fist by a handful of counties. Aoife, Galway didn't win in goals last year. This is a rematch, the final, obviously. From what we've seen so far, Galway aren't a whole lot less potent than they were in 2019. Have Kilkenny shored up their defence? Have Kilkenny, Galway proofed themselves?
They've moved the midfielders from last year. They've gone back into the defence. And we saw, I suppose, Davina Tobin in the semi-final there against Cork. She completely nullified Amy O'Connor in her threat. And, you know, she's a very exciting player for Cork, obviously. But for Kilkenny, they had a very slow start against Cork. And what's positive for them, it was a little bit like what happened to them last year in the All-Ireland final. Galway got a goal in the first minute. And then they come on and got 2 goals again before the end of the first half. But this time, they had a very slow start again. Cork won 3 on the board. But they came back, they chipped away at it. And the likes of Anne Dalton, I suppose, you know, pulled them into it by the scruff of the neck. But I think, looking at both teams, from the team that started in the All-Ireland final last year, Kilkenny have 9 starting from there. Whereas Galway have the same team, but they also have Hopper McGrath's daughters, I think, as they're known as. They have the few McGrath girls that came back into the panel this year. So they've really, you know, boosted their bench is amazing. You could look at the one, I think the 1-30, whatever, but they have 5 or 6 serious options that would make any team in the country, whatever. But Galway have been a bit like Limerick. People are kind of saying, you know, they're winning, but they're not that exciting winning. They're, you know, they're not playing with a real flair or anything, but they're getting the job done. They beat Tipperary by 6 points. And I've seen Tipperary play a few times this year, and I really liked the way they were playing. And I thought, you know, that Galway beating them by 6 points was actually a huge result for them, because, you know, Tipperary have made great strides in the last few years. But it's going to be a serious battle. The Galway full backline and even their backline unit as a whole, but Sarah Durvin, Shauna Healy and Heather Cooney, like, nobody's getting past them. They're the toughest full backline in the Camogie scene, I think. And, you know, you don't go past them easily. So there's just going to be some really, really good key battles, key matchups going on as well. And I think, you know, it's going to be a really good game on Saturday night.
Yeah. Brendan, you as a Manchester United fan would have appreciated Anne Dalton quoting Roy Keane during the week, or paraphrasing Roy Keane, saying you don't thank the postman for you don't congratulate the postman for delivering a letter, so don't be congratulating me for scoring. Last year's final, she only scored 2 points, and only one of them was from play. So that does show you the absolute ferociousness of this Galway defence that they can keep someone like Ann Dalton to a single point from play.
Yeah,
there's no doubting that Kilkenny had the forwards, it's just whether they could actually, you know, score.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing. I mean, Tipperary had only three scorers on the day. You know, Roisin Howard, Cat Devan and Sarah Friday. And that Galway defence were seriously, seriously good. All six forwards scored for Galway as well. Kilkenny had that bad start. Obviously, they'll get huge hope from the fact that they came back from, it's not easy down in Cork to do that. But I just think overall, Galway will have that bit too much. Aoife mentioned the bench that they have, you know, they can, if it's not going right for them, they have a fix, you know, and Hopper's daughters obviously have been a huge fill-up to them as well and added that extra bit of strength and depth. So I just think a bit like Limerick, Galway have hit a golden generation of camogie players, and they'll be very much aware that they have to make it count now, because you might not get this opportunity again for years. And so I just think they will have too much scoring power for Galway and or for Kilkenny, and certainly will be able to keep the door shut at the back as well to stop Kilkenny getting goals.
Absolutely cruel. Absolutely cruel, though. I mean, if you look at it, right, I mean, I was reading about it. Like, Kilkenny have been in every final since 2013. Bar one, I think, which was 2015 final. They've been in every final since 2013, and they've only one title show for it. They've been beaten in the last three finals. This is their fourth final in a row, which, like, they could potentially lose. I mean, that would be very tough to swallow for any player, Aoife, would it?
Like, and I remember, I was at the game.
Are they under pressure? Do you think Kilkenny are actually under pressure, even though are they under a little bit of pressure going into this?
I don't know. I've been, like, even reading, like, a few interviews with the players and things, like, some of them were supposed to go to Australia, some of them were going to take a year out, but because of COVID, because everything that happened, they're back in playing, but they're really enjoying their camogie. And they have some new players as well that will play with, like, you know, with abandonment. Like, they haven't been there before. They're going to come up, they're going to play with it. But I remember the final whistle last year went, and I said, Jesus, how could you pull out your boots again coming into November or December and, you know, and start back on that road after losing another final? But here we are, here they are. And if anyone can, you know, pose a threat to this Galway team, I think it will be Kilkenny. Like, Denise Gall, like, she's one of the best hurlers in camogie, or in, you know, she's left and right. She's a serious aerial threat as well. So, and Murray, she brings Miriam Walsh into it as well. And just the camogie, it's a little bit different too this year. You know, there's new rules as well. So, you know, there's more physicality. You can forget about the hand pass goals and things like that. I think we're going to see a better game this year than we have in other years. And we have to look at it as well. Kilkenny lost two of those games by a point. So it's not like as if they were hammering any of these finals, and you would keep coming back then, I suppose. Yeah. And they were just exceptional Cork teams as well that they come up against. And I think Cork tactics as well, like, Cork tactically were very good on those days, you know, when they did beat Kilkenny. So it's not that they haven't been, you know, there, thereabouts, a swing of a ball, and they could have, you know, won those games as well. And we'd be talking about their dominance in camogie. So it's just interesting the way things happen and the way things fall. It's,
yeah, I think as well as that too, in fairness to Kilkenny, Brian Dowling has done a fantastic job, and he'll come at
really, really good job.
Yeah, really good, with a different angle. Like, he hasn't got any of the hang-ups from being bet in any of those finals in the past. He's seen 2020 as the opportunity for him and his backroom team to do something. And I think Kilkenny are playing with that no baggage, will say, look about them. So that's what he'll be hoping they'll bring into this camogie final the weekend as well, and can express themselves and maybe get the goals that'll rock that bit of confidence Galway have.
Yeah. It has, Aoife, it's been a great championship in terms of the spectacle of it. The fact that, you know, the games prior to this have been in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, you know, they've been live on television, people have been able to see them properly, as opposed to not knocking live streams, which do allow people to see matches, but they're often, you know, they're one camera or two cameras, and, you know, a lot of the grounds that the camogie players were playing in the last couple of years wouldn't have been close to the standard of Páirc Uí Chaoimh or Croke Park. Yeah. That combined with the new rules, which have, I think, improved the game. Maybe not, they haven't revolutionized it by any means, but they have made things a little bit quicker. They've probably cut down on the number of frees. It's definitely been we could talk about what happened with the ladies' football last week, which was obviously a disaster from a PR point of view. It has been a good year for camogie. There's been more matches on TV. They've been in better grounds. The spectacle has been better. And it does look like we have the two best teams in the final.
Definitely. Well, and
I thought Cork should have beaten Kilkenny the last day. Sorry.
Rory, that was fair. That's what your Cork hat on.
I thought Cork left that game after them the last day. I was watching and I thought they actually, but look, I suppose, you know, you wouldn't begrudge Kilkenny now getting to the final, but I felt Cork actually, you know, they did a lot of wayward shooting.
And they took a lot out with, like, and I know Paddy Murray probably was giving out afterwards about media, but they did play a short hand-passing game, which at this time of year, I don't know, did it suit them? And with the quality of the Cork team, like, they can score from anywhere. So I think
But conversely to that, though, Aoife, I think it probably helps Kilkenny to a certain extent in that I think they got a really good test. I don't think they hurled as freely as they possibly could. And maybe they will. And hopefully they'll keep that performance for Saturday night from their point of view.
Yeah, they were coming in cold. Look, and it's no disrespect to who was in their group, but they had Westmeath, Waterford and Limerick, you know, whereas Galway had Cork in their group. So they had, you know, they had a good test against Cork. But going back to the Camogie, I think it's been a great season so far for the Camogie. They've had, you know, they've had no PR issues, nothing. Everything is done, you know, really, really well. I was up at the intermediate and junior final last weekend. That was on in Kingspan, Breffni, and two brilliant games of Camogie as well. Really open, end-to-end. There was goals in both games and really good quality. And it's great. New eyeballs are getting to see Camogie as well this year. It's reaching new platforms. And it's very, very good. And I do think that Kilkenny and Galway are the two teams that I'm most excited about seeing in the final in terms of what they will bring to the final, I think.
Okay, so you go first and Aoife, call it for us.
I do think it'll be very close. I went against Kilkenny in the semi-final actually, but I do think Galway, just with their bench, will have a little bit to spare, but I think it will be close, maybe a couple of points in it. I think Galway just have that experience. They've been there before. They are the champions. Now they have a little bit of weight on their shoulders, maybe trying to put back-to-back All-Irelands because they haven't been able to do that before. But I do just think that they're playing to a system. Cathal Murray has them, really well tuned. I just think they'll have a little bit to spare.
Okay, Rory?
Yeah, I go along with Aoife on that. I think they just have that. I think Aoife makes a very valid point in terms of the experience. Carey Dolan, Niamh Kilkenny, Rebecca Henley, I just think they've just a better spread of scores. I think against Tipperary, all six of their starting forwards scored. I don't necessarily see Kilkenny having that spread of scores in them on Saturday night. And I would probably give a kind of a strong nod to Galway, actually. I just think they'll have too much all over the field and more heartbreak for Kilkenny, unfortunately.
Brendan, any hope for the Cats?
No, not really. I think it could be... no, it's not.
He says that with such glee as well, doesn't he?
I can't see it. I just think the strength and depth that Galway have, the way they played against Tip, the way they shut down Tipperary forwards, the system and style of play that they have, the experience, all that kind of stuff means that I do think they'll win. I think there'll be more than maybe 3 or 4 points in it in the finish-up, but I do think Galway have more than enough to get over this one.
Well, I, for one, as a Wexman, really hope that Kilkenny can throw off the yoke of mediocrity and win in All-Ireland. They're starved of them. Right, ahead of the Joe McDonagh Cup final, we'll be back in a minute with an interview with the Kerry coach. Right, we're back. Brendan, how are preparations going?
It'll be going fine. It's unusual times. You've Kerry and Antrim now in Croke Park in a McDonagh final. I think looking over all the McDonagh games, I think probably the two best teams in the Joe McDonagh are in the final, like the Liam McCarthy final. It's been going well. It's been fantastic to watch the development of these Kerry hurlers over the last number of years since Fintan O'Connor took over. It's his fourth year in charge now. I've been giving him a dig out over the years, and I suppose at this stage, the players now are playing with a good bit of freedom, and they're moving the ball with confidence, and they're playing the way, I suppose, that we'd have hoped they would, and they're starting to reach their potential to a certain extent.
Yeah. Antrim potentially going to be without their talisman of the last couple of years in Neil McManus. Obviously, you'd like him not to be there, but at the same time, you don't think he's quite, like, he's no longer... Like, the, not that he was ever a one-man show, but he's not quite as integral to how they play as he has been in previous years.
No, and I mean, like, you would have looked at McManus and Keelan Malloy would be the two, I suppose, that we would have said at the start are going to be the ones. But I've watched Antrim an awful lot, obviously. We've played them now four times since June 2019. They've beaten us four out of four. So you get to see a lot of them in video and all. But McManus, he limped off in that league final and he hasn't really been right since. He hasn't really showed much. But you look at Conor McCann and Michael Bradley, Niall McKenna, Cunning in the corner. Like, this, they're a Division One hurling team. I'm not trying to say this to blow up Antrim because Darren Gleeson has done a huge amount of work with them up there. Liam Sheedy put, I suppose, the groundwork in with them last year and Darren is taking it on now. They're a seriously, seriously good team and they are the sum of the parts, you know, all very, very good hurlers. No one marquee forward that's the go-to man all the time. So I think that's the transition that they've made and that's why they're going to be playing Division One hurling next year and they'll have huge aspirations with Casement Park being done up, all that kind of stuff, and Antrim hurling to try to kick it on. So Neil McManus, while he has been a fantastic warrior for them, he's not as big a loss as you would have thought if you hadn't seen Antrim playing as much as I have.
Actually, I just thought it was funny that the two former Tipperary goalkeepers on the sideline for this one, have yourself and Darren been in contact much?
Not amazing, man. No, I'm just, you know, I see him after most of the matches saying, well done, Darren. That's about as close as we'd have gotten, you know. But when I heard he was going into Antrim, I knew that something good was going to happen up there. Like, obviously, I'd seen him last year in the Championship Interviews by 14 or 15 points last year in the Joe McDonough. And you could see that there was a rising happening, I suppose, in Antrim, that they were starting to get a good group of players together. They have huge strength and depth as well. Donal Nugent comes on, and he's a seriously big fella, you know, with great skill as well. So, you know, they have a lot going on in Antrim, and Darren has done fantastic work up there along with the Antrim County Board in getting into Division One hurling and now on the brink, the same as Kerry, of getting into the Leinster Hurling Championship proper.
Yeah, a couple more. Shane Conway, how good is he? Like, his UCC boss describes him as the Leo Messi of hurling. You know, you get to see a lot of top-class hurlers up close between your media work and your coaching work. How good is he? Because a lot of people won't have seen him play 70 minutes that often, you know?
Yeah, look, he's extremely good considering he's still in his early 20s, 21, 22 years of age. He's a huge amount of pressure on his shoulders, but I think he embraces it. I've seen him training every night. He's obviously, as you'd expect, one of the hardest trainers we have. He moves the ball, his wrist work. It's going to be exciting, I think, for people around the country to watch both Kerry and Antrim. The level of skill and intensity you're going to see at 1 o'clock on Sunday in Croke Park. And I think it's a great way to showcase to Joe McDonagh, because I've seen Westmeath and Carlow, like when they got out of Division 2 into 1, they won the Joe McDonagh leash the same way we saw it last year in Croke Park, and how they blossomed out of this competition. So it's a great platform for the likes of Shane Conway and the Kerry hurlers to show, like, that they're not just the minions that, you know, are they playing that old Joe McDonagh thing? We don't show it half the time because, look, it's grand, it's a token thing. But that is simply not the case. And I'm delighted now this weekend. These teams didn't get to play the league final in Croke Park as it was promised. So now it's great that both of them on merit have gotten back there. But Conway is a special talent, all right. And wait to see Mikey and Podge Boyle and these lads, you know, from Ballyduff. And names, I suppose, that people wouldn't really know much about. They're going to hit the four on Sunday at 1 o'clock. It's amazing. I can't wait to see these guys play.
Yeah, can you just confirm for us, the Examiner, the story yesterday or the day before, you have to clear out of Croke Park after the final? You're not allowed to stay on and watch the senior final?
Yeah, that's probably the most disappointing thing. It happened to the ladies footballers last weekend, and I think the journalists who were covering the game, they had to leave. We're the same way, the post-match. I suppose plan is that Kerry and Antrim get out of Croke Park as quick as you can, lads. I think it's extremely disappointing that is the way it has gone. I can appreciate the optics, I suppose, that you have 70 or 80 of both teams sitting above the stand when you're frontline workers who've done massive work for both Waterford and Limerick that can't attend the game, and families of the players as well. So I suppose I can see why they're doing that, but it's hugely disappointing that we are trying to promote the game. These players will be in Croke Park anyway. It's not as if they're rocking up getting free tickets to watch it. I've seen the dedication that they've put in as well. But I can understand the optics, but it is certainly very disappointing that when the game is over, they'll be told, pack your bags, lads, and get out of the stadium as quick as you can before the Lee McCarthy starts. So it is disappointing.
It's mad, isn't it, Aoife? Like, we're not talking about... We're not talking about a provincial ground here. We're not talking about a Wexford Park or even O'Connor Park, which are big stadiums in Rona. This is Croke Park. This is an 80,000 capacity stadium. where you could put the one team in one upper tier and the other team in the other upper tier, and they might as well be in Phibsborough. They're nowhere near the senior panels or the backroom teams.
I was really disappointed when I saw that, especially when you're trying to, you know, say to Antrim and Kerry, look, we want you here, we want you at the top table, we want you progressing along, but then, you know, sorry lads, you have to go out. Now look, I know there's a lot with COVID and everything else, but definitely, I think they're in there anyway, they're adhering to the guidelines, you know, leave them watch the match, you know, put them at either end, put them at opposite sides of the pitch, but there's definitely enough space, so hopefully a bit of common sense might come in maybe at the 12th hour or whatever, that, you know, it might happen, but it's not looking likely. But yeah, very disappointing for them. And I'm sure, like, they're all hurling, you know, hurling supporters, and they've been watching the championship. I'm sure they would love to see it. And just on Shane Conway, I can't wait to see Shane Conway on Sunday. I used to go to, my husband was involved with Lixnaw for a number of years, and I've seen Shane play, and he's class. He's one of, you know, he's a real talent, and really looking forward to seeing what he brings to it on Sunday.
Then Roy, just like on the limitations in the attendances, yeah. Obviously, like, the president's not going, the president's the GA, is he going? Like, I know that the top brass from Croke Park aren't going, and I don't think Michael D is going to be there, is he? Yeah.
No, well, not at the moment. The Jubilee team can't attend, and I know people might say, oh, whoop-de-doo, but like, that's real. I mean, like, the Clare team in 95 is a great story, you know, and they'll only have two opportunities, and hopefully they'll get in there in 2 years' time. I think, though, what Brendan said is spot on. The optics, I suppose, like, if you have a situation where you have, like, you'll have 30 players, 10 backroom, that's 40, and then you'll multiply that by two, that's 80. If you have 80 people, even 80 people in the stands, picked up on photographs or anything like that, and social media and all of this type of stuff, and then you have the families of players of the Liam McCarthy who are told, like, he can't attend, and it's just, I think, from the GA's perspective, look, they're trying to do everything by the book. It is very, very disappointing, though, that, like, in this day and age, that we're beholden to, you know, the outrage mob and social media, and we have to put rules in place to fend off from situations like that occurring. I think that's kind of symptomatic of where society is, and it's really, really unfortunate for both Kerry and Antrim, given, as Aoife said, they're there anyway. They've already been cleared to go into the stadium, and, you know, cup up, and to be herded out of it like that, it's a bit unseemly, but unfortunately I don't think the GA could do anything on this instance.
Brendan, there's a few pubs around Croke Park that will give you a substantial meal, I'm sure, as long as you go in groups of six. Or is it eight? It's eight, isn't it? Groups of eight, you'd be grand. Well, look, we wish you, Brendan, the best of luck on Sunday. Hopefully you can break that cycle.
And possibly the first time, Brendan, where I'll ever be cheering on Kerry.
That's okay. We'll take that. Right?
There's a victory right away.
And only.
So look, our coverage of the Camogie final is part of the Super Saturday on RTE TV, radio, and online, where we're shining a light on women's sport. We've got the FAI Cup final, and then we've got coverage of the Camogie final. You'll find all sorts of build-up columns, this podcast, all sorts in preparation of those. And then Sunday, we have the Joe McDonagh Cup final and on RTE2 and RTE Player, along with coverage of the senior final on the same platforms as well as RTE Radio. And we'll have live blogs and reports and everything on the RTE News app and the RTE Online. So a tremendous weekend ahead. I hope everybody enjoys it, and I hope everybody's
great weekends.
Yeah.
And we will. Thank you to Aoife and Brendan and Rory, and we'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point, and there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. What? It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses!